Hello all, welcome on in to the X-Wing segment of the Wide World of Wargaming. As always, I am your host, Vincent Morgado. Joining me at a somewhat late hour, that is why they may sound a little bit less energetic than normal, Mr. Jeff Wilder.
Together we can end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy.
And Mr. Drew Bishop. Is that your best Shaun of the Dead zombie impression?
I could do better, but we'll leave it at that for today.
in the words of the great Ed, who the fuck died and made you fucking king of the zombies? Yeah. So, as there have been no events since Madrid, and there have been no new releases, although Jeff is giving us all a little bit of a panic, apparently the July 11th release date is no longer confirmed.
All I'm saying is that I was watching some streams at work, Gold Squadron, and there were people talking in the background about how July 11th, how their game store told them July 11th was not going to be the release. That's all I've heard. I haven't seen that anywhere else. I just heard people talking. So, you know, don't go out and.
So just so we understand the consequences, if that's true, you can't actually run Naboos or Hyenas, even if you have them, at this weekend's hyperspace trials, right?
No,
yes. I think
because they're not released.
And that makes me think that it's probably not true, because I think that our hyperspace or our hyperspace trials guy Matthew would have, the store probably has the product already or knows if they wouldn't have it, if they wouldn't get it. And we would have been told. So I think it's just people on stream talking that didn't really know what they were talking about.
Somebody heard something from somebody.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not that they didn't know what they were talking about, but I mean, every store is different, right? Every store has a, you know, maybe a different supplier. Some people get them more than others, right? Earlier than others, later than others. But Matthew would have 100% told us by now if the new stuff would have been not legal, I think. I mean, we're less than a week away, right? Like, we're, what, 4 days away?
Yeah.
Or going to be 4 days away pretty soon here. But yeah, I'm excited. I know people have it. I mean, I bought an N1. I'm interested in getting the Resistance Transport. I still haven't been able to wrap my head around that thing. Oh.
It doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit with that faction at all.
Yeah, it's almost like it's like too many kids in a candy store. I don't know what thing I'm trying to think of, but it's like it has too much. It does too much for me to like look at it and be like, okay, I want it to do this, right?
Yeah, no, I don't know how to fit that in any list either. Because it's not just none of them are just coordinate caddies. They all have some sort of secondary utility that they want you to use, but you're like, but I can't build to use it. Even with the number of crew slots, I don't actually have enough crew to use them all.
Yeah.
Right, right. Or if you do, it dies too fast without being able to do the second thing decently, and it doesn't have decent damage output. I'm not saying it should have decent damage output, but like it feels like a Swiss Army knife, right? Where like, you know, the guy's breaking into your house and he's robbing you and you're like, oh god, I gotta pull out a thing to help, and you pull out your Swiss Army knife and like 60 different tools pop out of it like a freaking cartoon, and you're like, I don't know which one to use.
Then
you lose and he robs you.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to buy four transports, god knows, but four transport pods and Chewbacca seems like a,
oh my god,
I remember we were talking about this. It sounds it like sounds very silly
place to start.
Something. Whoever is doing this kind of thing on Vassal, stop. That's who I blame for that kind of shit. But what we wanted to talk about today was ships that we kind of feel got left behind, and not just archetypes. Although if there is one, it is called the M3A Interceptor. Nothing has been done really to make them more playable. Like whatever combos with abilities, whatever turrets or, you know, whatever you want to say to has been added to the game hasn't really done anything to make them more viable. you know, Fenrau gets tossed around a lot. I don't think Fenrau's not competitive. We see him make cuts. We see him leading lists that do very well. I've always leaned to the opinion that scum around Fen isn't good enough, not Fen himself. What do you guys think?
I agree. And that's one of the reasons why we don't see Fenrau a whole lot nowadays. While he does make cut and has made cut in the past, it is, as I like to say, you know, who you fly with, right? Like Whisper back in 1.0 was only good enough because of who you could take with her, right? And I feel like a lot of these Imperial Aces are the same way. Is Soontir Fel really, really strong in a list by himself when he is not accompanied by another I6 that can really pump out damage and, like, has the, you know, the durability to stay alive, right? Like, does Fen have the durability to stay alive by himself? Can he carry a list by himself? And, you know, I mean, in certain lists, sure. But I definitely feel like because his partners got hit so hard, mainly Fett and, you know, the Hawks, I don't know if we'll see him much until the ships that got left behind get a little, you know, get some love.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, what do you think?
So Fenrau and Old Tarok, first of all, if we're going to talk about ships that have been left behind and we want to talk the Fang Fighter, every other ship has been left behind. Cad Solas, Joy Rekoff, Skull Squadron Pilot, those are not played. They're not. Fenrau and Old Tarok are interesting because although I don't agree with their costing relative to one another and relative to ships outside the faction, they are both played, and they both occasionally do well. My big thing with Fenrau, I think Old Tarok's about right, just for the record, but my big thing with Fenrau is Fenrau 12 points better than Old Tarok, and is Fenrau 15 points better than Soontir Fel? And you could say, well, people play him and he makes the occasional cut and everything, but like Vince just said, he needs ships to surround himself with, and that whatever extra he is paying that is probably too much over his comparison to Old Tarok and to Soontir Fel, he's not able to put into other scum ships to fly with. So I really do think that he's not a 68-point ship, even though some people have done pretty well with him.
I think the problem with Fenrau is that FFG does not know how to price extra dice abilities. They haven't shown that that things like, you know, Talonbane or Zuckuss or, you know, Fen or pick your favorite, they all have abilities that add additional dice above the norm. And there's no consistency in what a red die is worth, right?
Right.
And that's, I feel like Fen gets punished really heavily. Not only, everybody loves to say that Concordia is like, oh, it's a 10-point ability. All right, let's be perfectly clear. If Concordia is a 10-point ability, Fenrau is like a 54-point ship at best, right? Because he's only 4-hole with 3 agility dice. That's 28 points. It's 28 points. Then let's say you add 10 for Concordia. Where are the other 30-something points of his cost coming from?
Right.
His dial is good. Sure, he's got good linked actions, so add on something there. But he's, you know, Fenrau's added dice ability is not worth 20 points.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Okay, Drew, so, go ahead.
No, yeah, the double reposition and the fact that at range one... Yeah.
He does not have a double repo.
He's not a double repositioner. So his I6, although it's valuable, is not as valuable as Fel's, for instance.
He has he has a roll into a focus and a boost into a focus.
Right. For stress, yeah. I still think that his ability mixed with Concordia, like that's where the extra price comes from. But at the same time, too, the one thing I wanted to mention was you know, all of these points changes, I'm assuming they were done at the same time, right? But, like, Fen Rao, his points have stayed the same pretty yeah. much since the beginning. And everything around him has changed. And I'm wondering why, like, why don't they look at each ship as a whole with within a faction, right? Because, like, I don't know, bringing down Fen Rao's friends, we might see Fen Rao more. Would that mean Fen Rao goes up? I don't know. But I look at it and it seems so weird to me that, you know, as you guys were just mentioning, right, like 15-point difference between Old Tarok and Fen Rao,
yeah.
right? Like, that seems a little extreme to me, even if Fen Rao doesn't seem to be, you know, as he's not appropriately costed. Would you guys say that?
When I play against him, he absolutely feels like he hits like a 70-point ship. The problem is he doesn't die like one.
Right.
He dies like a 30-point ship. And because if you blank, if I wedge crack, if he decides to joust, which no, you know, sane wedge, Fen player ever does, but sometimes there's nothing to be done. If I have initiative, like, I'm going to joust Fen Rao with wedge because I'll that exchange favors me. I take his 5-die hit, probably don't die. If he rolls 3 blanks and then procs Concordia, I just took half his health and I probably got a crit through. And that's assuming I don't have crack shot, in which case he just dies.
Right.
It's the same with Vader.
Wedge is a very edge case. Well, it depends if Vader, right, like the force is spent, right? How much force does he have? But at the same time, you know, those two ships you just mentioned, Vince, look at the buddies they can bring with them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, off the top of our heads, we could name at least 2 or 3 that are really strong, really helpful companions to take with Wedge or Vader. And Fel doesn't... Does any ship come to mind?
Guri.
I like Captain Seavor, Guri, but, like, Guri went up a point, right? Like... We don't see the two of them together in competitive lists.
No, the problem is that Guri needs points. Like, Guri needs probably 15 points extra to make her the savage that she can be against anything lower than I-5.
And, a minimum, it's 10 points yeah, at a minimum.
That, like, literally just slapping advanced sensors on it. And then if you're, you know, a baller, you put out maneuver on her and you just shred harder. But that's the point. Like, she's basically an 80-point ship with minimal upgrades.
Yeah.
Right, with almost the same chassis. Now, obviously, with the Virago title, you can make her pretty dang tanky, which is actually quite awesome in my eyes. But whenever I've tried building lists around her, it's just like her and Fett,
yeah.
right?
Virago
and like a mining guild tie because they're just so expensive.
Yeah, and but you know what? Guri's another thing that you can't bring her down because even stock, she's a shredder.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
Guri's an arc dodger, which gives her what I really think you hit on something. Fen Rao is fragile enough that pricing him what he does for the hammer that he brings just seems like too much.
Yeah.
In the games where he doesn't get shot at because the players have made bad targeting priority decisions, or you're just a really good player and you've always known when to perfectly when to bug out, when to abort your range one shot, when to do whatever. He is easily worth his points. But if he's getting shot at, he's not worth those points. And the interesting thing is the reason that I think you hit on something, Vince, is that Old Tarok, who I think is priced approximately appropriately, is very durable at range one because of Old Tarok's new 2E ability.
Yeah.
Super durable. It's weird. I respect people that play Fen in a tournament where there's stuff on the line because it is I think that it's accepting a handicap at points wise.
Yeah, but you know, we don't want to say that he's because Fen Rao's not a 60-point ship. That's too low, right? Nope. But it's you can't, you know, nope. Where is it? 62? I mean, is he
63 is where I would put it. And I know you hate odd numbers, but 63 is honestly where I'd put it.
You know, it just that also worries me because then essentially you're saying he's as you know, he's you're pricing him the same as Luke, which yes, I understand the force. Yes, I understand permanent regen. In no world does an X-Wing ever beat a Fang straight up. Like, almost regardless of chassis. Or regardless of pilot. I don't think that's a controversial statement, right?
I don't think it's fair to compare the two that way, but I do agree with you that, I mean, you know, these ships are appropriately costed, you know, with the faction that they're in. I'd love to really quickly touch down upon something that's been going on in the Star Wars Legion community very recently. They released General Grievous's card with his point value on it, and people thought it was fake because he was costed so cheaply in that game. And Alex came on and very briefly spoke about why Grievous is actually that cheap. And, you know, as far as the droids are concerned for Legion, they're, what is it? They're like orcs from 40K. You just take a million of them, right? And they're supposed to die. They're fodder. And Grievous is sort of like this commander who, you know, needs to be able to put the team on his back and, like, get the job done. And so I really feel like I've been really trying to wrap my head around some of the point costs in X-Wing because, you know, being like, well, you know, we're never going to see a ship exactly like Luke in Scum, but we're also never going to see a Fen Rao in a Fang fighter in Rebels, right? But, like, having their costs be about the same, does that still seem okay? Or does it seem like it's not enough?
Well, you need to have internal consistency for cost. I mean, yes, there is. They do different things, and thus their points cost may be equivalent. But the problem is that FFG has added things that trick us into thinking that things are equivalent, like stealth device now being costed for agility, like hull upgrade and shield upgrade. And as soon as you look at that, your brain automatically starts doing, 4x and 2x, right? You know what I mean? You start doing the math in your head. Veteran turret gunner is another problem for anything that has a bonus attack. Your brain immediately wants to start breaking these ships down into component abilities and costs and going, well, wait a minute, that's bullshit. Why is this guy paying 4 for this ability where mine is an inferior version, but I pay, 6 or 7? Like,
yeah, I was going to say, you pay double. Oh. It's the same thing with the E-Wing. I think the E-Wing is the biggest loser in all of this, along with the Defender. Like, their chassis are some of the best in the game, and you just never see them because they are so incredibly – I don't think they're overcosted, but something needs to be done in order to get them to be played. I don't know. I don't – I'm not too sure how to get them on the table, but
they dropped the Defender after all, and
they dropped the Defender and then gave their best upgrade the same increase.
You shouldn't be stapling Juke to a 70-point ship. The word staple shouldn't exist. Every decision on an upgrade should be a sacrifice.
Yeah, I like the fact that the Defenders went down and Juke went up, even though I'm sort of philosophically opposed to, I think the problems with Juke aren't tied to its cost, but regardless, I do think that giving Defenders options outside of Juke, which is basically what they did by lowering the price, is a good thing. I think we can look at the ability cost you were talking about, Drew. With and staying in the same faction, look at Talon Bang Cobra compared to Fen. Talon Bang Cobra is 18 points less than Fen Rao. 18 points, 2 additional health, 1 less agility, same ability on offense, His ability on defense is slightly different because he gets it in the range 3 instead of range 1. Obviously, his dial's not as good. He doesn't have Concordia face-off.
He also doesn't have any linked actions.
18 points? That's true. But, I mean, 18 points is amazing. I mean, that's just wow.
Yeah.
He's also initiative 5 and not 6.
Yes.
Or is he 4? Or is 5? Man, who would the Hutts name? The Hutts name them? I don't remember the story behind it, but damn, man, I thought being a Talmain Cobra was, you know, like the greatest thing, you know, since sliced bread for scum guys, and now the title of Talmain Cobra means absolute garbage when you're not initiative 6, yeah. Right? Like,
I always liked the headcanon of him being like the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, that's pretty much it. It's whoever is the aciest pilots among the, I don't remember who it was, the Hutts or the Blackson or whatever, becomes Talmain Cobra. But it's, I mean, being initiative 5 is not, or sorry, being initiative 5 and not 6, I don't think is going to cut it in a world with initiative 6s. But I mean, his ability though, right? Like it's on any attack. Yeah. Which is really interesting, yep. But I don't think I don't think there's any list out there right now that uses a 6 dice range 1 attack, unless you put the advanced proton torpedoes or something on it, right?
Like, so right now there's not a missile that can push to 6 dice.
He could technically proton rockets.
Yeah.
I mean, an I-5 proton rocket is not bullshit. That's what I was saying,
yeah, proton,
right?
He could proton for 6?
I suppose so.
But yes. That's the thing, though, right? Like, did you just say I-5 proton rockets?
Yeah, but no reposition whatsoever. Okay. I mean, you got a barrel roll, I guess, but then right. You don't have your focus, presumably.
Well, yeah, because that's the problem with Talonbane, right? Because Talonbane, being an I-5, cannot hunt what he... I assume people are thinking he's meant to hunt, right? Like I-6s and stuff. So if you run a list, with Talonbane, you know, you got to look at what else you want to run. But I mean, if you run Fen Rao with him, like that is like half your list right there.
So that's
yep.
60-70% of your list. I think Talonbane Cobra.
I think Talonbane's for everybody else. Like you bring Talonbane to deal with everything that isn't I-6s, and then you bring a strong turret to protect him, and then some fodder would be the list I would run around Talonbane. Like pairing him with a Shadowcaster, considering that they're down into the mid 60s up to the 70s. I mean, that's 2 ships plus 2 scrub TIE fighters or whatever garbage you want to throw in front of them. Or even, you know, if you wanted to, 3 Benir pirates, just as blocks or just to, you know, set up places where you don't want an I-6 to go. But
there you go. You could run a hotshot Dengar with swarm tactics for a little over 70-ish points.
Yeah, like there you go. Why not?
Okay.
But you know, it's I just think that there's a real, you know, what do you do? You can't build every list with, well, this guy, everybody has to be able to fight I-6s. That's just not realistic. You have to have somebody whose job is to clear the chaff. The problem is those people normally get blocked and then swarmed to death, or they get blocked by the low initiatives and then they get killed by the 6s. I think is the problem.
Well, so I don't know if you want to pivot, but you were dead on the money about the M3A interceptor, man.
I don't even care about it. Like, let's be perfectly clear.
Oh yeah, man.
The M3A to me does not have any of the good feelings that a lot of people have for it, just because I think it's ugly as hell. But this thing is, I've never seen one. I've been playing X-Wing, I guess, since August I've never seen an M3A on the board that I'm aware of.
So I really feel like the release of the Mining Guild tie really solidified the grave in which the M3A Interceptor sits.
I mean, the thing is that the M3A Interceptor has hard points, right? So its price is going to be significantly above that of the Mining Guild tie if you outfit them.
This is true.
I think you were right earlier when we, episode or two ago, when you said that the Mining Guild tie basically supplanted the Z95 in the Scum faction. I think that's basically true. The Z95 is, unless it gets serious help with a missile or something, it's dead in Scum. But I very nearly lost to a genius Randy Gunderson was running four M3As at a store championship that I brought four ship rebels at the time, which was just an ungodly list. And basically the four of us were going to meet in the top four, the four people who had brought four ship rebels. And I very nearly lost his four Mangler Scum, his four Mangler M3As. And that was an eye opener for what the ship could do. Now, again, it's 1E, but it can definitely have a role. And I do own four or five of them with different paint jobs, and I'd really like to use them at some point. So FFG, if you could give us another points drop or something, that'd be well.
Yeah. Well, it brings up a very interesting question, actually, that I hadn't really thought about before. What do you guys think of the idea behind weapon upgrades that are specifically for certain ships and only those ships? Is that detrimental to the game? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense fluff-wise, but like, you know, a Mangler cannon that's only for the M3As, or, you know, like a mini not as good twin laser turret for the K-Wing that's only for the K-Wing to get Miranda on the board or something like that. Like, I'm just trying to think of...
In that case, you'd want to make it a config.
Right, yeah. Okay. Or like a specific missile for the Kirax that makes the... Like a specific harpoon-style missile for the Kirax that makes the Kirax better, right? Like, it kind of locks those ships into specific builds and positions. But at the same time, I think that we'd see them flown more often if they had their own little thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Well, the Kirax's problem is the same as the X-Wing's problem. It's just, yes, it's slightly cheaper, but it's not enough.
Right.
It's a generalist and a specialist world is the problem.
There you go. Yep.
When everyone's special, no one is. Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Well, it doesn't do anything special, but everything it does, what an X-Wing does, just a little bit cheaper.
Right.
So,
but yeah, the Kiraxes also have this special little turd, which is, you know, they were designed to have multiple modifications, and that really didn't move over well into 2.0, literally at all. And I think, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of really interestingly good illicits come out yet. I mean, there are some that are really strong. You know, the fact...
Well, in extended, contraband is playable now. There's no way around that.
Oh, yeah. No, and I think...
Well, imagine, for instance, that Glitterstem was available as an illicit. The Kirage can carry two illicits, so Glitterstem and something else... And Glitterstem is very strong.
It was very strong.
I mean, you may want to limit that. You may want to limit that in some way that, you know, that only certain configs can carry.
Right. Or just making some unique, right? Like one upgrade that, you know, like, oh, this is a really good Scum card, but then we're getting into like staple or crutch territory, right?
Exactly. exactly.
That's the problem with making things that are specific for one ship type.
Exactly.
I think they missed an opportunity. So what I think we're seeing with the M3A and the Courage and what else? Maybe the E-Wing. Although the E-Wing.
The Aggressor?
Yeah, maybe.
We can keep saying it.
They missed the ability to give them a they missed giving them a chassis ability. And I think the chassis abilities are really cool. And I think the ships that most people complain about most often don't have chassis abilities.
Or whatever one they have is it's more often than not a detriment. Like the chemo, basically. Like if the chemo's ability was front arc, you'd never hear you'd see that ship on the table every day.
Right.
The problem is it's probably too powerful as a front. I mean, it's as a whole front arc ability with a thing that is such a good ordnance carrier that has the potential to be such a good ordnance carrier.
With the larger base size as well.
Yeah. They got fancy with a lot of the chassis abilities. And the problem is when you give, they turn the game into a lot of haves and have nots. Basically, like ATC on the I would argue that probably the two best chassis abilities in the game are the Resistance A-Wing and the TIE Advanced.
Oh, I was going to say the Aether Sprite, the double reposition on like an interceptor, ridiculous. But I do, okay, but I do agree. Like everything that you guys have listed, everything that you listed, Vince, is also like insane, like so insanely strong.
Yeah, and then you have the opposite, which are like another one is the Star Viper's chassis ability is mental. Like the only thing holding back the Star Viper is that it's made of glass, and it's kind of slow.
Right, and there's no I-6.
You don't want an I-6 with that ability. That like really honestly, that's a game breaking.
No, that was the creation of Whisper. Back in 1.0, Echo was the high initiative Phantom, or so I heard, and she was like unstoppable with the two banky D cloak, and so they lowered Echo's initiative and created Whisper as the higher initiative pilot, and kept the cloak normal. But I do completely agree with you having that sort of insane movement on an I-6. Is like that can't exist in the game, because if it does,
because like the asymmetric barrel roll basically means that if Guri rolls, you can't get out of her arc.
Yep. Nope. 100%.
Even if you try to roll, she's now canted, and it's to the it's at such an angle where more often than not your roll is not going to get you outside of her.
Yep.
So she's one of the few fives in the game that can actually fight sixes. And if you gave her ability to a six, good luck bringing anything else that isn't a turret.
Well, just to point out that unless she has outside help, Guri, the only reason Guri can modify shots if she barrel rolls is if she gets within range one.
Right.
So the Star Viper, if it rolls, its roll is extremely good. But if it rolls, it's also not modifying.
Right, and Guri is the only one that can do that and get modifications
without outside help.
Yep.
Let's move on to another. You know, we've kind of bemoaned Scum for long enough. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like they did a whole lot to really help the fact. They didn't do anything to help Scum enough at all. Is the sad truth, and I don't think anything's going to change really for them. Let's talk about something that crosses two factions. Are the Hawks playable now without the Crow? Any of them? Like, is there any of them that is a good enough pure support that you would justify basically taking a no offense ship? Let's be real.
I still
by me no.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think you have to take the Moldy Crow And I think that with the cost of the Moldy Crow and the points decrease on the Hawks, you still won't see them.
Moldy Crow's 18 points, right?
18?
18, yeah.
Yeah, it's just too, I mean, you need the Moldy Crow to make it a ship that can contribute to the list. At least I would. And
yeah.
And it's just too expensive. It's just too much.
Because, I mean, I don't think there's any real contest that Palob and Rourke are probably the two best of the Hawks, just in terms of what they actually do. Jan is good, but having to stress herself kind of restricts what she can do. And, you know, Kyle Katarn is good, but with the Crow, like, you can only pass one token.
And that's the problem, too. Rebels have many different ways of getting those free tokens from cheaper sources.
Like, between Benthic, Jake, Garvin, and Lando, there's really no point taking Kyle at I3 in a terrible, like a terrible ship.
Right.
Now, do I have the history right that the Moldy Crow was bumped from 12 to 18 because of double tap dash?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't think so.
I thought it was Palob.
No, I thought it was Palob. And the 18 point change came with the first update, but that was when Garrett ran it at the Minock Open and won with it. It was Fett, 2 Jakku Gunrunners, and Palob with 000, and that was freaking... I played him. That was ridiculous.
The funny part... Oh, sorry.
No, that was it. It was just... I think it was just... It was too cheap. And then even after that, Rourke with the Han dash... combo, that was still a problem.
But they killed that combo. I was getting at was that if I was remembering correctly, and it does sound like I was, then the Moldy Crow, I thought the Moldy Crow was an overreaction to double tap dash, which they just killed, as they should have, by saying this isn't how this combination was intended to work.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I think they could have done with Inertial, with Handbrake Han as well, but whatever. But if the Moldy Crow was raised before that, then my cause and effect was wrong. But my points moved.
But I think we're still hitting across the fact that the Moldy Crow is still too expensive.
Moldy Crow combined with the chassis is still too expensive.
Yeah.
I think the proper thing to do is probably lower the chassis until it's not too expensive.
I like that, yeah.
I think probably if you just bump the Crow back down to 12, you'll see it again.
Oh, well, yeah, cool. Sure, you would. But the truth is that the Moldy Crow giving... The thing about the Moldy Crow is that it not only gives you that front arc 3-die attack, which is massive, it also doubles the effective... area of effect of whatever ability that the Hawk has. So
no, it only doubles firing arc abilities.
Well, that's isn't that most of them?
Well, you've got Dace for the Ion. You've got Palob to steal tokens. You've got Mux to make low initiative. All of them have
Torkoal for
you literally have almost every single Hawk chassis and pilot has an ability that has to do with arc. And right. So you have to take the Moldy Crow to get the turret so you can use your ability more or better.
Yeah.
And I just don't think it's functional, at least at the moment, points wise.
I mean, would 14 be okay? 15?
I mean, 15, I would have liked to have seen him try 15.
Yeah.
Use the laboratory the way that I had thought the laboratory was intended to be used to find balance. To me, it just doesn't feel like it feels like everything is reacting. It doesn't feel like they're actually searching for balance so much as they are saying, no, bad players, No. Yeah. And I'd rather them be trying to find balance for things.
Another thing about the Crow is it was 100% another one of the Jeff Hates FFG special. They don't know how to adjust for variables.
Right.
The Crow got caught up. I mean, absolutely. That's the truth.
Absolutely.
And that's sad that it took out, you know, it took basically what, 11 or 12 pilots out of rotation just by changing mm-hmm. one upgrade. And the other thing is that's a ship in two factions that probably a lot of people own is yep. the other issue. And you just can't play the Hawk in the front line and rely on a 3-die unmodified. You just can't do it. It has no business being there. Even, you know, anything that's dedicated to doing damage will literally tear it apart in one round of shooting and be like, okay, thanks for the half points. Moving on.
Yep. The Hawk is the target. I mean, if the Hawk is shootable, then generally speaking, the Hawk is the target because it can legitimately be killed by two or three ships shooting at it, even at range three. It can legitimately be killed by two or three ships shooting at it. And then if you've got the Moldy Crow and your, I don't know, Rourke, your 56 points.
50. No, I think it's 59.
Oh,
I think Rourke is 41 and Jan is 43.
You're right.
Yep. Yeah.
59 points. And that's too many points to give away to somebody, man.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about that you're buying a stock Dengar for 5 hole basically when you slap the Moldy Crow on there.
Oh,
yeah. So I would have liked to have seen them experiment. Drop it to 15, see what happens.
Yeah.
You know?
I really want a reason to fly the Hawk with Rebels, and I just can't find one. Like, I've thought a couple times of doing an all I-7 build where I run Rourke, Wedge, and Luke with Heightened was something I thought about trying, but like... The problem is that initiative in the shooting phase is not in the engagement phase is not nearly as important as in the activation phase.
Right.
Although 7 in the shooting phase is pretty good. Yeah,
is it?
Because there you don't have simultaneous init. So 7, if you kill an I-6 in 7, that I-6 is dead.
Yep.
So 7 is so much better than 6 in the shooting phase, especially if you string together your root bird.
Oh, I wouldn't even bother trying to get Rourke up to 7. I would bump Wedge up to 7. I would Rourke Wedge up to 7 and have Wedge swarm Luke and have, you know, or no, I wouldn't even put swarm on Wedge because I'd rather have an offensive buff on him. You know, I'd rather have crack shot to try to push that damage through.
See, I kind of like the whole Rourke Wedge up to 7, swarm tactics Rourke, and then heightened on Luke. Three three-die ships shooting at 7. I kind of like
that. It would piss somebody off, that's for sure. But the problem is Rourke's not going to get any kind of decent arc on somebody. And Luke really doesn't either. Like you would need something standing around next to Luke to give him a second action.
Yeah, and then that brings in the other question too. Anything the Hawk can do support wise, whether it be token passing or keeping the crew, that specific crew on the board,
better.
You can do it. You can do it better and cheaper.
Well, you could do it better and more and with better value, not cheaper.
I suppose this is correct. I was thinking like just a basic U-wing, right, with the ability to pivot, still rolling 3 attack dice, still got coordinate, and for minimal points you can, it has more hold too.
Yeah, it's just the stock U-wing isn't getting the pilot ability. You're getting the when I was running Jan before they nerfed it into the ground, I ran her stock with squad leader, and that's the other problem. They whooped the shit out of squad leader.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just saw that on the builder, like 12 points for like TBC or Dengar to take. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, like it was one of those things where they just murdered four or five upgrades instead of doing what they should have done. Jeff, tell us all about the word variable again.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's it isn't. They make no attempt to figure out what the problem actually is. They just bump everything that's touched the problem. They just bump it up.
Yeah. Yep. They are trying to do, and this is where this came from. They are trying to do what MOBAs do, which is, whatever information they're getting, they want to constantly readjust the game to keep the meta, to improve the meta. The problem is MOBAs accept the inherent imbalance with their games, so they just bounce everybody around between imbalances, so everyone gets to be the best at some point. Whereas the X-Wing, they're not doing that. They're just, anytime anything shows being good, it gets hit with this, it gets hammered down, and then it's just not seen again. So
everything that it's touched isn't seen again, because everything it's touched has been increased, even though not everything in the list was the problem.
Right. And there's certain things that are just basically recognized as untouchable. Like, apparently they're not going to mess with the TIE fighters. Apparently they're not going to mess with the X-Wings. Apparently they're not going to mess with, the M3. Whatever reason, every faction has a ship that they will not adjust despite glaring problems with it. And that's just, that's the religion of the playtest group, I guess.
It is, it's just disappointing to me. I had expected, I just sort of expected better use of the points change as a tool than we got.
This one just doesn't feel like it's anywhere near as impactful in terms of allowing more than the old one, than the January point change, right? Does anyone else feel like that?
I don't know if I feel exactly like that. I definitely feel like the first points change was a needed points change, and this update definitely helped get rid of some of those other issues too. But at the same time, no, I don't know. I kind of agree with you, Vince. I don't know. There used to be excitement around each faction, and I do feel like with this points update, especially with Scum, I don't think I've ever walked up to someone who was like, oh yeah, man, the new points came out and this is a legal thing I can take now. Like, or, oh, I didn't think of this, right? Like, now it's just like, oh, my list went up like 4 points, right? Or like, oh, my list went down 7 points. Oh, cool, I can put a new upgrade on, or like a new missile or whatever. But yeah, there's just, I don't know, there's just like, it just feels like there's something missing from this update.
It feels like this update, all they did was knock stuff down, and there weren't changes that really called out, hey, this ship, this list archetype, even this pilot really is now a playable pilot. It wasn't that anything was lifted up. It's just that lots of stuff was knocked way down. Including casualties that didn't deserve it, which is the misery of it.
Yeah.
I felt like with the first change, stuff was knocked down, but other stuff was lifted up. So I was more excited about the first point change. Maybe I'm just too cynical. I don't know. Maybe I just expected too much.
I think maybe all of us did, because there were so many things that we were all like, all right, this needs to go away and that needs to go away, and they'll fix that, and then once this is gone, maybe I'll be able to run this, and once they change this, maybe these will be available. Plus, it's going to come right when Wave 4 is going to drop, and it's going to shuffle everything up. And then the point change didn't do what we wanted. The new models aren't exactly out yet, and we're kind of in like a down. We're in like a momentary lull in competitive play where it's like, all right, somebody do something, right?
Now, I can say as a sort of a bright spot, speaking personally, that in terms of fun casual play at League Nights, I feel like I can legitimately take just about anything that isn't a total trap build and have fun with it. Win or lose, I can take something and be pretty competitive with it at fun league nights. And that's a good place to be in terms of X-Wing when you're not talking cutthroat competition.
Well, rightfully so, Jeff. I mean, Admiral Akbar isn't in the game, so
they came just an example of something, someplace where they came really close this update to pushing it to exciting and playable. Those were Rogue Squadron pilots in the E-Wing, man.
No.
So close.
No, all the money is in the Red Squadron veterans, right? With or the experts. For the for the resistance with our good girl, what's her name?
Jessica.
Oh, I don't remember her actual last name, but her real name is Jessica too. The actress's name is Jessica as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's actually kind of silly, but either way, but yeah, no, she's pretty cool. And that list I saw just the other day, although I can't say the game I watched was particularly fun.
Was it Echo Squad?
Which one?
Was it on Echo Base?
It was on Echo Base, yeah.
Andy Myers versus Daniel, whose name they didn't put up.
He's a very famous guy, though. Daniel has won a couple of System Opens and Hyperspace events and all
this
that,
is
right?
He's won a couple of System Opens?
I know he's
this
really
is
good.
Death and Three Reds with Heroic? Yeah, that one seems fun. Yep.
I'll be a very generic, maybe not as good. I mean, certainly not as good as, you know, Quad Phantoms, right? But like that, so that sort of generic multiplier list, I don't mind seeing a list like that across the table, right? Like that's fun. It's fluffy. It's cool. It's not particularly nasty. Although, you know, in the right hands, it could be. But yeah, no, I don't. I think that's really the only. One of the only, like, one or two lists that I've heard of that, like, people were like, wow, this is so awesome, yes! Whereas everyone else is just like, oh, cool, I gained a few points, I lost a few points, my list didn't change, right?
Yeah, nothing flashy. Yeah. You either got hammered, or nothing really exciting happened.
So it's like your first 18th birthday? Right, or like turning 21, yeah. 21 for the first time, right? You either get super wasted and hammered, or you're like, oh, this is what it feels like. Okay.
Or if you were a reprobate like me, nothing really changed.
We talked about Fen at the beginning, and I want to close this talking about another pilot that's probably more than a little bit overcosted. Can we please talk about the fact that Corrin Horn still is the same price as Darth Vader?
Oh my God, he's the same price as Darth Vader.
He's one. That's what no one ever. As soon as you say that, you watch people's eyes and they go, "Oh Christ!" And like you realize how terrible his costing is. If you look at what his ability is, and if you actually let's put it this way, if you look at the two abilities that he has as an E-wing with the long range lock and the double tap. It's so overcosted, it's actually terrifying. You can buy a second attack either out of your front arc or any arc you choose for 8 points, right?
Sure.
Okay, Corrin Horn's ability is only his bullseye, and it's not at the same initiative.
Right, and here's the other thing too, like the whole thing that made Corrin Horn good back in like first edition was like the R2-D2 regen, the ability for... FCS to get, you know, reacquire that lock after you use it. And both of those things, I mean, technically, you know, R2 does technically exist in 2.0, but also got an equivalent, change based on initiative. And FCS, they can't acquire locks at range 1 to 2.
No, that's why I think if you're going to run Corrin, you're like, running R3.
Sorry, even so with R3 also, like it's just, you look at it and it's like the 1.0 from Corrin Horn doesn't exist in 2.0 and it never will, right? Like the ship is different and played differently, and is it worth, what is it, 78 points? Is that what he's worth?
66 is what he costs. Here's the thing. I think that, and he's a point less than Vader, I do want to say. I think that Drew touched on part of it. It is 1E panic. We see that in a lot of places. 1E panic. And then the other thing, honestly, look at where he started. Because he has dropped 8 points from his starting cost.
Yeah, somehow someone thought 74 for an E-wing was acceptable.
Yes. I would like to see the E-wings come down significantly.
Like, they're not counters to defenders. That for some reason, everyone has it in their head that, like, oh, yeah, the E-wing needs to be at a point where it can fight. An E-wing has almost no chance to get to defender straight up. Between action economy and the white K turn, it's not even funny.
Yep. It's a completely different ship.
Yes. People like to say it's a sniper. No. The E-Wing has right now no defined use in Rebels. That's why nobody plays it. It can't do anything better than things that exist in other places. It's not as good offensively as the high point X-Wings. So there's no point taking it for that. It can't dodge anything as well as the A's because they don't have the double reposition. What is this thing supposed to do? And then not only that, what the hell is Corran Horn supposed to do when you can buy a better version of his ability again for 8 points? What used to be 6? And then add a disarm token for maximum disrespect on top of it. Like, what are we talking about? It's so insane. Dengar gets a second attack at his ability, at his initiative, and it could be for all we know a proton torpedo, and he's 10 points cheaper with more hull and I6. Yep. Right, like, how right. Overcosted is Corran Horn? I did quick math for the E-Wing just based on pure comparable abilities and what it costs for hull and shields at its initiative. I got 54 points for Corran Horn. 54.
Yep. You gotta go back to school, man. He's worth 66. Didn't you know?
No, he cut. No. You are worth what somebody pays. I'm going to go economics here. You are worth what somebody pays for you.
That's true, man. So, it's true.
Let's just say you cut the difference and Corran Horn is 60. Gavin Darklighter comes down 5 or so to 56. Rogue comes down to 51 because you don't want 4 of them in a squadron. That's fine. And then the Knave comes down to
47.
48. Yeah. I mean, is that going to break anything? It doesn't seem like it.
If you can't beat 4 6 hole initiative twos with no bonus action economy of any kind, you have a very that's a problem of piloting, not the game, and definitely them.
If you build them, they have bonus action economy because they're gonna have.
What about giving them one more hole and S foils? Ba-dum-tsh.
I would absolutely run 5 Black Squadron T-70s over 5 Rogues even if they were 50 points. I just would.
They are going to have some action economy. The ability to grab their locks gives them one round of good action economy, and if they build out with fire control systems, they've got action economy. If they build out with R3, which they should, they've got action economy. It's just not – they're too much, and the fact that they didn't go down enough that Gavin and Corran Horn – I mean, I would be wary at 54 for Corran Horn, but 60 is not going to – it's not going to break anything.
Why does 54 scare you on that, knowing that he can't shoot the turn after he uses his ability?
Honestly, the only reason 54 scares me is because he started out at 74. Somebody somewhere thought that he was worth 74 points, and
So again, that was with the points costed before, right? With other things, but right, because when he first came out, that's what he was, right? So I feel like again we are seeing this issue where certain things are being brought down, and the stuff that's getting ignored is keeping their point values from when other things were costed differently. I almost feel like, very similarly with, man, what game am I thinking of? I know there's at least one or two game systems where when, you know, updates and patches go through, everything gets shifted. Even
it's called MOBAs. You're talking like Dota and League of Legends. They're called MOBAs.
Yeah, like even just slightly, even if it's not worth it still with the change, just the fact that they're, you know, switching it up a little bit makes it, you know, makes people feel like, oh, they're at least aware that, you know, Cornhorn is never being used, so on and so forth. And I do feel like, what do you guys think about the idea of points changes going forward? Everything gets touched. I mean, obviously, certain things are pretty decent where they are right now, but I don't know what's...
Everything, how about everything gets looked at?
Yeah, okay.
I would honestly love if they just, at this point, it would be funny if they just put everything into a hopper and just started pulling out white balls with numbers on them.
When I first, I swear to God, it was sort of tongue in cheek, but we were talking about how they would do 2E. We were talking about it on the FFG forum. And I was like, look, they don't even need to have points on the card. Everybody's connected. And the points can be dynamic, you know. And at one point, I was like, if they really got their act together, and they really collected data,
yes,
you could have dynamically shifting points from week to week, based on the use and value and performance of each card.
Yeah.
True. You could week to week cards points costs could get adjusted. Now that's not practical in terms. I mean, even points adjustment right now in 1E, I had every card memorized, every points cost memorized. In 2E, I don't even try anymore.
No, and that's with less cards.
Right, because that change. I mean, it's fewer cards, but when you count two different changes plus two emergency changes, then it's more cards have been chained. There are more cards with prices.
The scary part, Cornhorn isn't even the one that's had the most the reduction in price.
The biggest reduction?
Yeah. You know who it is?
No, I know who it is, but is it a white team?
No, it's the Decimators.
Ah, yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
12, 10, and 12.
Very interesting. I would have liked to have seen. I love the E-Wings, and I would have liked to have seen. I would have liked to have seen them get play.
Well, if you guys are still big fans of three hull and three shielded ships, why don't you run 5 Zeta Squadron survivors with homing missiles and passive sensors?
Those ships are very, very, very close to being super good.
The SFs.
Yeah, the TIE SFs.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked to start seeing them.
They are very close to being super good. If they get a good missile, they are going to rip things apart.
Yeah, they need. I hate to say it this way, but this is probably what it needs to be. The game needs a 4-die missile that reliably does 2 damage and a ship effect against a 2-die, against a 2 evade die target. That's what the game needs right now.
Well, I mean, as we were just talking about, right? Like the Kirax would could really use a missile that's unique to it. The TIE SFs, if they just had a slightly better missile, you know, they'd be right on top of things. The M3A is really looking for that old school Mangler cannon, which I don't think we'll see again in 2.0. But I think
the auto blaster is not it.
I feel like rightfully so. And the auto blaster is definitely not it. It's cool. It's kind of fluffy. I like the idea behind it. But, you know, it's like a lot of upgrades in 2.0, which are very much you look at it and you're like, oh, yeah, that could be interesting. But, like, meh, right? Like,
too hard to use. Too hard to use.
Exactly, right? Too many hoops to jump through to get a benefit that you could just run a naked Kirax and get it by itself, I guess. I don't know. I mean, the third die, maybe not the crit, but, you know.
I think they need to, you know, they need to just find, go into the EU or go into Rebels or whatever, or just, you know, take 10 seconds and come up with a decent name that I'm not coming up with, add a four die range, 2 to 3 front arc only missile that reliably does 2.5 damage after mods. And there you go. You know, that's how you make a lot of these missile boats playable in a competitive atmosphere.
It's called harpoon missiles, and oh my gosh, that's
don't
so
say
bad.
I don't want to hear that. hearing the legends and the screaming from the end of 1.0 made me hate that word like forever.
The difficulty that you run into when you talk about things like reliable damage is that you run into spam. You run into,
right,
what do I do if I can do 8 points of reliable damage?
Well, that's before mod. That's before defense die.
Okay, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
It's why I'm not a fan of ordnance in general. I'm just not I'm not a big fan of it because it's like you ordnance. Fluff wise, we want ordnance to do damage and to have these powerful effects. Fluff wise, that's what we want. Gameplay wise, when you spam that stuff, it breaks things. It creates Alpha Strike metas. It's really rough to balance.
Right, which is why I was thinking, well, which ways could you balance things like that? Making them unique? Making them for a single type of ship only?
You know, in a way, what if you just created a basic three-die missile, right? Or even a basic plus one to your primary weapon missile. Plus one to your primary weapon value missile.
Because then it goes on T-70s.
Okay.
T-70s don't have missile slots. They've got torpedoes.
Yes, they do. T-70s, they have cannon missile.
Oh, I'm sorry. I completely forgot they have the M3A ability.
So however you do it, a three-die missile or whatever, it's a very basic thing. And then you have configurations for the ships. So maybe the six, their configuration is when they fire this missile, they can flip a hit to a crit. And all of a sudden you've got a Mangler like effect.
Yeah.
Maybe the Courage, when it fires this missile, I'm not talking fluff here because I have no idea on fluff, but maybe the Courage, when it fires this missile, it regenerates a shield.
I see where you're going with just unique effects to make up for not having a chassis ability.
Right. Config abilities on a very basic missile that you can balance.
Yeah, because
right.
I mean, they already do that for the god. What's that stupid, ugly, should have been a Rebel ship Empire thing? The gunboat.
One of the most beautiful ships in the game.
Yeah, sure.
But either way, no. It's my friend has always been talking to us about how he really felt like secondary weapons should have been different in X-Wing just from the get-go. What if there was an upgrade that was like, you know, if this attack hits, cancel all dice results and, like, you know, deal them a face-up damage card, right? Like, just something like, you know, you can really push that damage through, albeit semi-reliably, but it's at the cost of, you know, oh, I'm only ever going to do one damage. I'm only ever going to do one crit. Instead of, you know, oh man, four attack dice, right? Like,
right.
But yeah. No, I didn't. It's It's a sad day for unusable ships that really have the same sort of issue.
Yeah, and, you know, well, I think that's a pretty good spot to leave it. We are running up on Jeff's bedtime. So, gentlemen, thank you both very much for joining me as per usual. Sorry about the late start. And thank you all for listening. Thank you very much, by the way, for all of your traffic on Apple Podcasts. It does make a difference. Have a good evening. We'll talk to you next week.
See y'all next week.
Take care, guys and girls and robots and meatbags.
And any gerbils if you're listening.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.